Radiolab is supported by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Radiolab is supported by the John Templeton Foundation, funding research and catalyzing conversations that inspire people with awe and wonder. Learn about the researchers making the latest discoveries in the science of well-being, complexity, forgiveness, and free will at templeton.org/podcast.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
Wait, you're listening.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
You're listening to Radio Lab.
Radio Lab.
From
WNYC.
See?
Yeah.
Okay, so how are we going to start this?
Well, I think we should start.
Wait. First of all, I'm Robert Krulwich. This is Radio Lab, and today we're going to start with our producer, Latif Nasser. Now you.
Okay, let me take you to the biggest democracy on the planet.
Yes, it is. You know, in fact, we have more voters than every continent.
India.
Ah.
Over 800 million voters.
We have 90 countries rolled into one.
Oof. And from 2010 to 2012, this guy, S.Y. Qureshi.
Yes, S.Y. Qureshi.
Was in charge of the whole thing.
I was the chief election commissioner of India from 2010 to 12. And before that, election commissioner for 4 years.
And Qureshi told me something that just astonished me. They have this crazy rule.
Our principle is that we would like a polling station to be within walking distance, maximum 2 kilometers.
So not a single of the 800 million plus voters has to travel more than a mile and a bit to get to a polling station. So no matter where you are in that giant country that is India.
This is true?
Yes.
We have polling stations in the deep forest and on the mountains where it will take 3 days to walk. There is no other way you can reach there. So while we use helicopters, we also send our polling party on camels, on elephants, on mules, on bicycles, on motorcycles, in boats, whatever it takes.
Which brings us to the Gir Forest.
We have a polling station in Gir Forest of Gujarat, only for one voter.
So in Gujarat, there is a forest, and there is a temple priest who lives inside a temple deep, deep in this forest.
By himself.
Yeah. And so what Qureshi would do is every election, he'd send a team into that forest, which, by the way, is the home to the Asiatic lion.
Oh.
And there are regular reports of lions actually attacking people. And basically, these guys trek 12 and a half miles into the forest, dragging along with them this voting machine, until they get to this, like, it's like a little forest outpost. They get there, they sleep overnight, and then early the next morning, set up the polling station, and then they wait. They just wait for this guy.
They wait for him to come and vote.
And there's actually a video on YouTube of this guy emerging from the forest to vote. His name is Mahant Bharatdas Darshandar. He's wearing traditional clothes, you know, this long sarongi type skirt. So he walks into this little station, fills out his ballot, gets his finger painted with a little red dot, right? That's to make sure he doesn't vote twice, which would be a little hard to pull off in this situation. But anyway, he fills out his ballot, and then his vote gets counted. This could be the most effort ever put into making a single person able to cast a vote.
And this is done, again, because no voting Indian should be denied a place to vote at a convenient location.
That's right.
Not a one.
That's right. It's a kind of beautifully noble idea.
Some people say that why do you have a polling? Why do you waste money for one voter? Because our principle is that every single vote counts.
But it's not like that guy's vote actually, you know, made a difference.
Well, of course it made. This is a beautiful thing to have a vote.
Yeah, I mean, so it's a beautiful thing in principle, but it's not.
Yeah, well, principle
because it's not like one vote actually is ever decisive. Like one vote never really makes all the difference.
I mean, you want one vote changes the world kind of thing?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. If not for that one vote, things would be different.
Oh.
So I decided to dig around, and this is the first thing I came across. November 1996, the day before the Clinton-Dole presidential election.
Okay.
Ann Landers,
Chicago columnist,
writes in her column, "Dear readers, tomorrow is election day. If you don't bother to vote, you have no right to complain about who gets elected. The essay that follows was sent in by a reader in Missouri." So here we go.
So we're going to read Ann Landers' mail, in a sense.
Basically.
Okay.
We're not going to read the whole thing because it's too long, but this is most of it.
Okay, yeah.
"How important is one vote? In 1645, one vote gave Oliver Cromwell control of England. In 1649, one vote caused Charles I of England to be executed.
Oh my God, okay.
In 1776, one vote gave America the English language instead of German."
Really?
We'd
really
be speaking German right now, the two of us.
Good.
"One vote brought Texas into the Union. One vote saved President Andrew Johnson from impeachment."
Oh, I've heard of that one.
"One vote changed France from a monarchy to a republic." "One vote gave Rutherford B. Hayes the presidency."
Impressive.
Now it gets a little darker.
Not exactly sunshining right here.
"In 1923, one vote gave Hitler leadership of the Nazi Party."
Oh.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Now, this is a pretty incredible list.
And in each case, had the vote been missing, the result would be different.
Right. History would be different.
I think that's a wonderful place to begin. Anyone who's thinking of not voting should consider this list with care.
With meticulous care. And once they go out and they research and they read their history, they will find that this list is totally bogus.
Totally bogus?
Exaggerated, mischaracterized.
Everything you just said.
Fraudulent.
Well, can we go back over them? Go back over them just briefly.
In 1645, one vote gave Cromwell control of England. I emailed several historians. One of them wrote to me that this was, quote, absurd. There was a vote in 1645. Cromwell was made lieutenant general of the cavalry, but no one knows the margin of that vote.
Okay, do the next one then.
"One vote caused Charles I to be executed." According to another historian, complete nonsense.
Over two. What's the next one?
"One vote gave America the English language instead of German."
I'd never heard of that.
"There was a vote to translate the laws, and then they decided, maybe it's better not to do that." "One vote brought Texas into the Union." In the Senate, the vote was 27 to 25. Two votes. Not one vote, two votes. And that wasn't even the decisive vote.
The next one?
"One vote saved President Andrew Johnson from impeachment."
See, I thought that was true.
The guy who made that vote was bribed. The vote, he was bought. That vote was bought.
All right, moving on then.
Right. "One vote changed France from a monarchy to a republic."
Impressive.
But you conveniently omit the fact that there were three revolutions in the prior 80 years. "One vote gave Rutherford Hayes the presidency." So this is true-ish. I mean, it was a disputed election, so it went to this special committee, and he did win there by one vote, but it was more like politicking than actually like voting. Mm. And last, "One vote gave Adolf Hitler leadership of the Nazi Party." In that case, the vote was actually 553-1.
So he got this exactly wrong.
Exactly wrong.
And so that concludes our lesson in journalism today. When receiving letters from total strangers, do not always assume that they know what they're writing about.
So, but it's like a bit, it's more than just a journalistic correction. It's like this instantiation of everything you believe about the society that you live in, that somehow your voice, however little, it's important and it's valued. And for this all to be wrong, it's sort of devastating, you know, and then you go on to...
This does not make me feel for even a second...
That your vote is not valuable.
That's right.
I don't know. It makes me want to put my money where my mouth is. And it's like, fine, you think one vote matters? Prove it. Make your own fact-checked list where you can prove that this is not an idealistic pipe dream. This is a real thing.
So are you about to present us with absolutely solid stories?
Rock solid.
Where one vote matters.
If Ann Landers did her homework, these are the stories that she would bring you. And they are going to inspire you if I have anything to say about it.
Okay.
So are you ready?
I am ready.
All right, let's go.
All right, so here are two, count them two, rock solid your vote does really count tales. The first one, actually, I wasn't quite expecting this, although it definitely reflects our national mood in a very vivid way, and it comes to us from our reporter,
Simon Adler.
That's me.
He's got us a tale.
I do.
It's an American tale. How would you describe it?
I think it's one of those classic us versus them tales.
Well, actually, maybe it's an us versus us story in its way.
Actually, I like that more because, in fact, it takes place right in America's heartland.
Where in the heartland?
Nebraska.
Seneca, Nebraska. This tiny little town in central west Nebraska.
Okay.
It's near the town of Mullen, Nebraska, which you, you know, obviously also don't know.
Yeah, no, that doesn't help me at all. So this is Matthew Hansen. He is a reporter with the Omaha World Herald.
So I got an email from a woman who lives a couple miles outside of town. She was really upset.
Because back in 2014, the town was split in half. And in fact, there was a group of people in the town who were
circulating a petition that would end the town.
Wait, circulate a petition to end the town.
Yeah.
They didn't want to be a town anymore?
Right.
Really?
Yeah.
You know, by law, if you have enough signatures on a petition, you can get things on the ballot.
And the question that ended up on the ballot was, should Seneca
cease to exist?
And it occurred to us that maybe, just maybe, this tiny little town in the middle of Nebraska might have something to say about the rest of us.
Well, and let's back up then.
Sure.
So when did all was well in Seneca until what?
It started with the horses.
The horses. Okay, what what are these horses?
There were six horses. Actually, let me step back. There were a lot of horses in Seneca. Most people in Seneca ride horses. Many own them. But there were these six particular horses right in the middle of town. And, you know, the split sort of started right there.
So I got so curious about what went down in Seneca that I flew to Denver.
One, two, three, four, five.
Drove
one,
five and a half four. Hours into okay. The sand hills of west central Nebraska.
Let's see if we can get anything on the radio here.
These rolling sand dunes covered in grass that they ranch cattle on.
Here's another ranch. What's this one say?
And smack dab in the middle of the sand hills is Seneca.
After many hours and many miles, we are here. Okay, so got these rolling hills that are green, dotted with these yellow flowers. Junction 86A, Seneca. Okay, we've got kind of an old, bigger red sign that says, Welcome, Seneca, with a big red line. Okay.
When you get there, it looks like...
Starting to drive through town.
A picture, postcard, small town from yesteryear. Bound by railroad tracks.
To our right, we've got the railroad. I'm taking a left.
I mean, really pretty.
To my right, an abandoned house. To my left, another boarded up house. Another street with absolutely nothing on it. An old gas station. It's all boarded up. Another rundown house that says no trespassing.
And just really tiny. I think one into the other is 1/8 of a mile.
And we're done. So there you go. At 30 miles per hour, it takes 10 seconds. Okay, turning around and wow. Okay, the house to the left here has a giant board over one of the windows that, and spray painted on it is Sandy H is a big fat liar. Interesting. And so I ended up just walking through this tiny town of Seneca.
You're like knocking on every door?
I think I may have knocked on every single door in the town.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and of course, I ended up talking to some folks who wanted to end the town, uh-huh. Others who wanted to save it.
And?
And first up, Judith Brown's house.
She told her notes to me were, come downhill, first house is nice, that's not me, burnt up yard. I don't know if this is it.
How are you this morning?
Well, now that it's morning and now you're here in New York City, and how do you do?
Good, very good to meet you.
Everyone told me I can't let you into my house, but I don't have any other way to cope with it.
I'm not worried about it.
And you want to plug in, huh?
No, I'm good. I am all set here.
Oh, good. Tell me who else you're going to talk to.
Larry Eisen.
Okay, who else?
And Jackie Sevier.
Okay. I'm the sanest person you're going to talk to today. Just so you know, that's what I think. That's a terrible thing to say. I'm sorry about the cigarettes.
No, don't worry.
I want to get into more contemporary things, but real quickly to set the stage. When did Seneca pop up on the map?
Well, all I know is when I was a little kid, it was a booming town.
What would you do?
Well, I mean, they had great dances and wonderful bands and beer, and there was no place else to go. I mean, Seneca used to be really, really fun. But okay, let me tell you the story. Some people had come and they bought a house in Seneca. Okay, this would have been fine, except they have all these animals. Nobody knows these people. And there is a big fuss about them and their abuse of these animals. They're sure these animals are being abused.
See, I was under the impression that this was all about horses in a front yard. Is that true?
They had horses. They had 6 horses in their backyard.
That's the yard.
So we're talking like 6 horses in the size of a 1-car garage.
Exactly.
Do you remember the first time you saw the horses here?
Saw them or smelled them. Yeah, both at the same time.
Larry Isom, former member of the town board.
I mean, it's pretty hard to miss when you drive down the street when there's 6 blocks to the town. You know, it's easy to hear about things.
And how did you decide that you were going to take this up as a cause as a member of the town board?
Because of the complaints that were called to my house. Like, what are you going to do about the horses? They're up to their knees in excrement. What are you going to do about it?
And so you wrote an ordinance or?
Yeah.
And what did the ordinance say?
I don't remember. It was 2 pages. But in any case, it stipulated a certain amount of square footage per horse as well as shelter.
Well, that was part of it. The thing about Seneca is there's always a war in Seneca.
Again, Judith Brown.
Okay, 6 horses in the front yard were the most concrete thing. But Larry Isom and the bats you're going to go see, they have always wanted us to look more like a cute little Colorado tourist town.
Wait, are we talking like beautification? Like
Yes. They wanted to create rules to create growth. And I think they wanted to keep us lower class people in line. And so they were out here telling us what to do. And, they'll tell you things about me.
Judith, she did the 60s in New York.
Judith lived in a commune
for a time and burned her brain out.
To Save Seneca 3, Larry Isom again. Nancy Isom, his wife, and here, Jackie Sevier.
So we don't want to defend. We don't want to bicker.
No.
We don't want to open that up.
The ordinances were necessary because of the situation that we were presented with. There was no elitism.
They weren't on that board to dictate to anybody in this town. They needed covenants for the horses. That's where you started. And then you had people that was trying to say, you're not going to tell me. And if you look around the little town, you'll see the ones that take pride in what they have. I'm sorry, but
we're getting back to the debate.
Mm-hmm. So the town was split in 2. I mean, we could have liked each other, but we've had nothing but constant fighting.
Hello.
Hi. Okay, she won't hurt you.
Well, what's the dog's name?
Presley.
Presley. I'm Simon.
Millie.
Come on in.
Also wanted to save the town. Asked her last name not be used.
Boy, this is exciting. I mean, I've heard so much about you and...
I have to ask, where did you hear about me from? Who?
Oh, Lord, this is a small town. I mean, it just all over.
The telephones are ringing with my name?
Yeah, pretty much. Okay, I got to be nice, right? You're recording all this?
I'm recording. You don't have to be nice, though. You can be honest.
Oh, I'll be honest. I have no use for those people. I didn't want them to take our town.
How long have you lived in Seneca?
Oh, gosh, about 36, 37 years now.
And how many people live here these days?
Right in town, maybe, I don't know, if even 20 do. Yeah. And we get talked about a lot. I mean, we get talked, put down a lot. Like, what are you, excuse me just a minute. Hi, honey, I can't talk now. Listen, Simon's here. Do you have anything you want me to ask him? Okay, bye-bye. She and I have been playing phone tag all day long.
Okay, so you were saying that people are making fun of Seneca?
Well, they do. They make fun of Seneca quite a bit outside, you know, and like, oh, Seneca doesn't have anything. What are you still doing here? And it's not like it used to be. I mean, years and years ago, this used to be the neatest little town you'd ever want to live in. And then it just, I don't know, it just went downhill.
In the town was dying. I mean, that's the only way you can say it.
Sandy Hansen wanted to save the town, unofficial town historian.
This started back in 73, I believe it was, when it stopped being a division point, so the trains no longer stopped here. So that did away with the three hotels, the 24-hour cafe, the man that had filling station pulled out in front of a semi at Mullen. That ended that business. His brother had the shoe shop, and he died of a heart attack sitting there working on his shoes. The lady that had the variety store tripped on a kitten and broke her hip. That closed that. And,
Do you mind if we just wait until the train goes by?
Nope. Anyhow, Seneca really started dying.
Presley, get away from there.
Okay, well, so I guess I'm here because I'm trying to talk to as many people as I can to understand what happened with the whole vote to unincorporate. Again, Saver, Millie.
It started out, there was six horses. They were up in mud up to their probably belly. And I think one of them had to be put down because it was kicked. This is how close they were together. Anyway, I mean, I'm an animal lover. I wanted something done about it. Several of us did. So we had a meeting.
The board tried to tell him, that's not sanitary.
Nancy Isom and the rest of the Save Seneca 3.
We did discuss it. You know, we're going to get the horses gone. That's the purpose of the ordinance.
But it was not just that.
Judith Brown, Ender.
They wanted to get rid of all the horses, all the cattle, all the chickens.
That is ridiculous.
Have your chickens, but do you flaunt your chickens? Do they run around town?
People were so afraid that their animals were going to be taken away from them.
And then, eventually,
the board members forbid people to have animals. That was the gist of it.
And so, more and more and more, the town got split.
There's a group of people here and a group of people here. Nobody gets along.
Nobody on the town board would speak to anybody, which, of course, then that just meant I'd just yell at them louder.
There's certain people that I just give a hand gesture.
A one-fingered hand gesture?
Pretty much, yeah.
People said things like, my dog doesn't want to be friends with your dog. It was awful.
Are you Terry by chance?
Yeah.
Can I have 20 minutes of your time to talk? Terry Hartman, who wanted to end the town.
Yeah, that's just got ugly. They started taking pictures of people's places and put it on Facebook and say how they didn't clean up their property and just public shaming people.
This was the Save Seneca people that were posting this?
Supposedly.
You know, there were aggressive comments.
We did have the sheriff come up. Did anyone tell you that?
It was just out of control.
I mean, what about a Xanax? You know, I took a lot of them during those years. It was a very unhappy time. And so finally, people started going around with a petition to get the unincorporation on the ballot. We thought, we will just unincorporate.
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 Unincorporate our village.
Unincorporate.
There are agitators in every group.
Okay, that's me.
That seems kind of like the nuclear option here, right? Like, we're just going to blow the whole thing up.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
I think that sense of shared community was just slowly dissolving year by year.
Again, Matthew Hansen of the Omaha World Herald.
And it had probably to do with what was happening in Seneca, but I also believe that it had to do with what was happening in the United States. Sort of the idea that winning the argument is more important than the much harder job of coming together and saying, okay, we disagree on this, let's find a solution to our problem.
I'm having a little trouble figuring out what's about to happen. Like, how close is this?
The sense in the town was certainly that this thing was just a dead heat.
Really?
Split right down the middle.
Oh, yeah. It's that close?
That close. And so when we come back from break, Seneca goes to the voting booth and decides.
This is Kim Esslinger calling from Bismarck, North Dakota. Radiolab is supported in part by the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, enhancing public understanding of science and technology in the modern world. More information about Sloan at www.sloan.org.
Radiolab is supported by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy. Radiolab is supported by Betterment. Let's talk about hustle culture. You know, the whole rise and grind, go big or go home thing. It's a lifestyle that may not be for you, but one that your money can handle thanks to Betterment. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. How? Their automated technology optimizes your investments again and again. With Betterment, your money is taking ice baths at 5 a.m. while you get your well-deserved rest. Your money downs protein smoothies and automatically reinvests your dividends. All before you head out the door. Your money is a workaholic, but you don't have to be because you've got Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed. Hey, Lulu here. You asked and we listened. You wanted a Zuzve shirt and we made one. It is a gorgeous celebration of the liminal being that is Venus's moon / not moon. And you yourself can sport this homage to the unknowable multitudes of those all around you and within you by simply joining The Lab. The Lab is our membership program. That is the place where we fight the fight against the fickle whims of the economy to make our show protected from all that based on listener support. If you sign up, we thank you with the brand new Zuzve t-shirt and also ad-free episodes, bonus interviews, and other swaggy stuff like stickers and patches. You can go check out the perks and see if it's right for you by going to radiolab.org/join. And thank you either way for being here, for listening to our show. We make it for you, Zve. Anyway, radiolab.org/join. Check it out. And thanks.
Hello.
Hello. My name is Simon. I think I sent you a letter a week back.
Oh, we're not going to talk.
Even for 5 minutes?
Nope. I don't want to. You'll probably talk to the haters, but I'm done. Let the lying dogs lay.
Okay, thank you so much.
All right.
Bye.
Goodbye.
All right, so that was Jacqueline Licking, who is the woman who circulated the petition, and she just refused to talk to me.
I'm Robert Krulwich.
And I'm Simon Adler.
This is Radiolab, and Simon Adler is with me. Just before the break, you were saying, Simon, the town was in god-awful trouble.
Trouble. Half the town was so upset with the town and the government and the people of the town that they were circulating a petition that would end the town itself.
I mean, I got where they were upset, but I certainly don't get the idea that the solution is to in this place that has existed since 1888.
This again is Matthew Hansen, reporter for the Omaha World Herald.
And it bugged me.
Well, and why did that bother you?
Because I'm from a small town. I could imagine it happening to my town. And I could also empathize with the frustration of the people who wanted to keep it a town. I mean, you have to meet Sandy Hansen.
Will you show me a couple of your favorite artifacts you've got here?
Sure.
Who operates a museum of Seneca history.
I want other people to know just how nice this place is.
You cannot go to her museum and not say, wait a second, this place has value.
This one I wish could talk.
What, we've got baseball jerseys here with the S on them?
This was the Seneca baseball teams. I got the uniforms, even the socks.
Oh, wow.
One pair of pants, don't have the caps.
Seneca had a baseball team.
Oh, yes, known all over the country. Now, this is the newspaper cutouts, 1860. These are pictures of family that lived here. These are advertisements of people of the area.
We got a Seneca centennial hat.
Yes.
And so people just send you stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so is part of the concern here that the history will be forgotten?
Yes, it is, because we have been a town for 120 some years.
And so what does it mean to be a town?
What does it mean? It means neighbors coming together for the good of each other. When my husband died, he died in Texas. I brought his ashes back. It planned on just having a graveside service out there at the cemetery. Well, the town people wouldn't hear that. They had a big meal prepared. My yard was mowed. The water was turned on. Everything was ready to go. And it became a full service.
And what did that feel like?
Felt like home. Like the way you're supposed to feel, you know, warm and wanted.
You see, they're talking about something that used to be.
Again, Judith Brown, who wanted to end the town.
They wanted to preserve it the way it was. And I agree, it used to be a lot of fun. But that's true of any town up and down this railroad.
Well, so if they're trying to preserve it, right, well, then what are you trying to do? You're just accepting that we're going downhill here?
No, I'm accepting that for I can't do any better than this for myself as an aging woman. I guess what I'm saying is, to me, it's heaven. Like, I don't care about my house falling down. I'm 70 years old and I'm going to finish up my art supplies and die at the respectable age of 96. And I do have enough art supplies that I've been putting up for years to do that.
Well, and was that the nerve that was being touched? You're bad because you want to live this way?
Yes. These people saying we can be proud of our town. We can make it hustle and bustle.
So if they're saying that, then you're saying, no, we can be proud of just the way it is now?
Yeah. See?
Okay, so when did you first hear about the petition going around?
Oh, gosh.
Again, Millie from the Save Seneca side.
I think the same day it was going around, I heard about it.
And how did you feel in that moment?
It was horrible. It really was. It was just, it was more than frustrating. It was just like somebody punches you in the gut. Just lets all the air out. You know, it's just sad.
Mostly it just seemed like if we could get rid of this unbelievable piece of bureaucracy, then we could just live here. So finally, the unincorporation, it got on the ballot at the regular election where you do the senators and all that. We had a special ballot for Seneca where we voted for the town and would it or would it not be unincorporated.
And what did you feel when you were going to that to vote? Were you?
I don't remember feeling anything except I've got to get in there and vote.
Do you, if you don't mind, just telling me how you voted?
Oh, I voted to unincorporate.
I voted to keep the town incorporated.
I have voted to unincorporate.
I voted to keep the town.
And then she said, okay, that's the last Seneca ballot.
Shoes on or shoes off?
Shoes on.
Okay. Heavens. Jackie Sevier, Saver. And so just because I don't think I've had anybody explain this to me yet. Can you explain the night of the election and what actually happened?
Well, you know, we have internet access, so we were watching the election results on the internet to see how it came out.
And who is we?
There were, I don't remember, four or five of us, six of us, maybe. I'm not sure who all was there.
So what, were you like refreshing the page over and over again? How did that work?
No, we knew about what time they'd be out. You know, we gave them an hour or so and we logged on and saw it. We saw that the village was unincorporated. It was by one vote.
It was 15 to 16.
We lost our town.
Sandy Hansen again.
What was that moment like?
I can't say it on the radio.
So what was lost?
Well, the day after they decided to abolish the town, the sheriff come down with them. I don't know whether they thought we were going to shoot them off with guns or what, but the sheriff came down. They took the grader. They took the tractor.
Thetford took our snowplow.
And we no longer have our street maintenance, our lights.
Maybe our identity. I don't know. We never had much here, but we didn't ask for much. I mean, we lost.
Seneca will be taken off of the map. And if it isn't on the map where they can look it up, well, they're there anymore. Nobody even knows it's there.
Well, I cried, but I mean, it hurt.
Nancy Isom again.
Because I've been here since my third grade year.
People are moving away.
And Jackie Sevier.
I myself am ready to go. We're all ready to leave. We don't have anybody. There's been nobody move here since. Nobody.
It sounds like you're saying the future is gone.
I wouldn't say it's gone, but I would say it's very, very limited and unlikely.
Yes, I have voted to unincorporate.
Again, Terry Hartman.
But I love this town. And I think the people who voted to unincorporate it are the people who wanted to keep things the way they were. We didn't want to change. I know everything has to change, but I didn't know what else to stop the fighting. You know, this is my hometown too. I don't know how to explain it. It just got so ugly and out of hand, and some of the members of the village board were just crazy.
But the town board was just three members.
Millie.
They have to do really what the majority of the town wants to do. Otherwise, we can get rid of them.
So you believe in the democracy of Seneca?
I believe in democracy. Does that make me an idiot? I mean, I live in hope, you know?
It really felt like Seneca had lost something essential when we're talking about basic American democracy.
Again, Matthew Hansen of the Omaha World Herald.
And it worried me to see that in part because I could feel that and still feel that happening on a national level. The kind of just complete lack of conversation around shared values or compromise.
I've got to smoke more and drink more.
And one last time.
Okay.
Judith Brown.
So,
can I tell you what I hear here? Maybe the strongest argument for keeping Seneca a town on the books is that then there was some sort of framework to force those two communities within the town to be together and to think together. And with that now gone, there is now no communication, no compromise.
Before? So none of those people had anything to do with us before except to continually criticize how we were. So we couldn't compromise with these people. They were not rational. All rationality was gone by then. And what's going to happen with this next election?
But America is full of diverse opinions, and it has managed to work. And I guess if we take what happened here, and if we apply that model to the rest of the United States, like, if not a town, then what?
We have the county, we have the state, and the little town, without those hateful people in it, is really quite lovely.
But it's not a town anymore.
I don't know why you think that.
Well, officially, right?
But it is a town. Here we are. I'm going to live here until I die, and so is Rose. And Harry until some woman lands him.
So you would say that even though on the books Seneca no longer exists, Seneca still exists?
We exist, and we're still two tribes. Two tribes of turkeys, that's how I usually put it, that'll never get along.
This story was produced and reported by Simon Adler. Special thanks to Ryan Scott on slide guitar, Michael Shobe on trumpet, Chase Culp on engineering help. Special thanks also to Matthew Hansen, a reporter at...
The Omaha World Herald.
The Omaha World Herald. Okay, coming up, we've got, I promised you, two stories that about your vote counting. The second one is a real picker-upper. It is, it's astonishingly important, pretty much central to the course of our national history, and I bet you've never heard this story.
Hi, this is Barbie calling from Portland, Oregon. Radiolab is supported in part by the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, enhancing public understanding of science and technology in the modern world. More information about Sloan at www.sloan.org.
Radiolab is supported by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call the shots on your auto insurance too. With the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Radiolab is supported by Babbel. Sometimes self-improvement can feel like a pretty overwhelming journey. So what if this year you just got a tiny bit better every day? When you're learning a new language with Babbel, that's exactly what you're doing. Babbel is a science-backed language learning app with quick 10-minute lessons that have been handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. You can learn everything you need to have real-world conversations, café s'il vous plaît, from vocabulary words to culture and more. And if Babbel can help you start speaking a new language in just 3 weeks, imagine what you could do in a few months or a full year. Here is a special limited-time deal for Radiolab listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/radiolab. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/radiolab, spelled BABBEL.com/radiolab. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Now, are y'all in New York?
Yeah.
I'm going to put on my most Southern accent now. I promise.
You didn't have to pander to us.
I thought that was pretty Southern, but yes.
I'm going to put on my most Southern accent here.
All right, so this is Carol Busey.
And I'm Robert. So we're Latif, Robert, and Tracy.
Okay.
Hi.
Hi.
That, by the way, is our reporter and producer, Tracy Hunt.
It's a 3-on-1.
Well, you know, we Southern girls, we can handle anything that comes.
Carol is a professor of history at the Volunteer State Community College in Tennessee near Nashville.
And you all do understand that Nashville is now the it city.
Seems to be.
But for our story, there was a moment in Nashville's history where it was not just the it city. It was the last stand in a long and vicious struggle for women to get the right to vote. It was the summer of 1920. That's an oral history recording of a 101-year-old woman named Abby Crawford Milton, who, in that very hot summer of 1920, descended upon Nashville with hundreds and hundreds of other suffragists like herself, anti-suffragists, lawyers, politicians, business people. They all came to Nashville for this fierce legislative battle.
The fiercest legislative battle that ever was waged on this continent.
Okay, now let me stop here and take us one step back.
Okay,
And we're also going to bring in historian Jill Lepore.
I'm a professor of history at Harvard.
Where do you want to start?
Okay, so when the United...
She told us that at the end of the Civil War, around 1865, as Congress was considering this new amendment, the 14th Amendment, which would give former slaves the right to vote, you had this small band of women who were wishing, hoping, fighting to be included in this new amendment.
Women expect that the 14th Amendment is going to lift any discrimination within the Constitution on the basis of race, color, or sex.
And why would they think that? Since nobody was saying, let's do this for the women at Gettysburg or at Antietam or...
Well, they had been the stalwart allies of abolitionists. Hmm. And women are really important to the founding of the Republican Party. And so when they say to them, oh yeah, okay, you guys are going to do this amendment. Obviously, you're not going to forget us, right? Like, we're going to right this political wrong. Let's do it. Like, let's just do it. Let's get this done.
So this proposed amendment is being talked about in Congress. It's being perfected. It's being tweaked. And it's about to come to a vote.
When almost at the last minute, the word male is put in there. Mm.
Amending the amendment so that only men can vote.
And it's the first introduction of the word male into the Constitution. So not only does the 14th Amendment fail to guarantee women their citizenship and the rights that come and privileges that come with citizenship, it specifically excludes them.
Wow, what a betrayal.
That's right. We're starting back at square one. So, you know,
at that point, some women are like,
God damn it. Like, all right, we're just going to go vote.
And so, for instance,
a woman named Virginia Minor actually tries to vote. They won't let her.
Goes to the Supreme Court. I guess you won't be surprised to hear. Are you on the edge of your seats? What is the Supreme Court? Oh, no. What are they going to do? I can't wait to know. It's a cliffhanger. The Supreme Court says, oh, ladies, oh, it's so cute that you thought you were included in the Constitution. No.
And then in 1878, Susan B. Anthony proposed another amendment to Congress for the right to vote.
People laughed about it and then put it aside.
And for the next almost 40 years,
there was no movement at all on this amendment.
Until
June 4th, 1919.
Just after World War I, after centuries of suffering, suffrage.
Both houses of Congress finally passed the 19th Amendment to give women the right to vote.
The amendment came after months of women protesting outside the White House and years of working jobs that before the war had only ever belonged to men.
But
of course, it also came with a constitutional catch.
It had to go to the states to be ratified.
Which just means that each state had to vote to approve it.
3/4 of the state legislatures have to ratify the amendment.
And how many states would that be?
Well, 36 in this particular instance had to vote for it. Now,
right off the bat, they got Wisconsin, Illinois, Michigan. And then after that, it's just like dominoes. You get state after state after state.
But then we got to 35 states. And it stopped.
Now, knowing that the suffragists were only one vote shy, the anti-suffragists beefed up their campaign, which made it just harder and harder to get that final state. It was looking grim. Until there was one state, just one state, that seemed like it might be teetering. And so, August of 1920, Nashville, Tennessee, legislators from all over the state start arriving at Union Station. They're just immediately greeted by both pro and anti-suffragists.
Trying to pin either a yellow or a red rose on their lapel so everybody across town would know which side they stood on.
That was Tom Vikstrom. He's the unofficial historian of the very place these legislators were headed.
The most fashionable place in town.
The Hermitage Hotel.
Picture the lobby during the month of August, swarming with people, both pro and anti-suffrage.
Women cooling themselves with palm leaf fans.
And, of course, no air conditioning.
Men smoking cigars.
Yes, a lot of smoking politicians up here.
And on the second floor mezzanine, you have the headquarters of the anti-suffragists. And it's actually worth noting that a lot of the anti-suffragists were women.
Campaigning actively against the right to vote.
And then on the third floor, suite 309, you have
Carrie Chapman Catt,
the leader of the pro-suffrage side.
She had no children and her husband had died. She had devoted all of her energies towards this one goal of getting women the right to vote.
So she's the big Washington, the Bigfoot from Washington.
She is. She is really much like a general
who is
both groups are there because this hotel is just a few blocks away from the State House, and they are trying to convince as many Tennessee legislators as they possibly can to come over to their side.
There was all kind of hijinks and you name it, eavesdropping.
The antis would send the legislators fake telegrams.
Saying, come home, your wife has died.
Or fake phone call messages.
Come home, your child is at the point of death.
So the suffragists are running around trying to stop these legislators from leaving town. Meanwhile, there's a room back at the hotel called the Jack Daniels Room,
where there was some Jack Daniels being dispensed by the anti-suffrage people.
And supposedly pro-suffrage legislators could be heard through the hotel walls singing anti-suffrage songs.
Tennessee is supposed to be dry, and yet the antis are flagrantly violating prohibition by having these events in which the liquor flows quite well.
All the members that they could get drunk, they took our votes away from us.
The closer and closer they got to the final day of voting, it became apparent that
people who had come to town saying they were in favor of ratifying this amendment,
who had been wearing yellow roses,
started wearing red roses.
And on the morning of the final vote, there had been so many red roses to yellow roses to yellow roses to red roses, flip-flopping, floppity-flipping around, that by this point, no one had any idea what was going to happen.
That's exactly right.
Is it now clear to everybody that if the legislature of Tennessee passes this, that it will become part of the U.S. Constitution?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, you didn't have any cushion states that you could go to, you know, Nevada next. There were no cushions. It's now or it's going to be a long time. And finally, it's going to happen one way or another on August the 18th.
So the morning of the vote, the hotel starts emptying out. Everyone heads over to the state capitol. But Mrs. Catt,
because she was going to be looked at as an outside agitator,
she decided to stay behind.
In the state capitol, in the House chamber. It's hot and humid.
And the room is packed. The 96 legislators are settling at their desks. And above them, in the
gallery around the top of the House chamber,
stand the suffragists.
They are there along with the anti-suffragists. And you can be assured that both sides have their little pads and are counting the votes. And as they look at the roses, there are 48 yellow roses and 48 red roses.
Oh, man.
Oh, and are these roses reliable? I mean, can you...
Well, supposedly. If you're wearing a red rose, you're going to vote against it.
So before the voting even begins, they can see that
we've lost.
Yeah, because you have to have a majority.
Yeah. And the Speaker of the House, he had initially supported suffrage, but he's really on the side of the antis by this time. And before they really start the vote, he actually steps down on the floor to give a speech against ratification of the amendment.
Wow.
So, you know, there's another letdown, you know, right. It's lost, we've lost, we've lost.
And two blocks away, in suite 309 of the Hermitage Hotel, sits
Carrie Chapman Catt. She was very nervous about what was going to happen. So they start the roll call.
And as these names are called, one by one, these men stand up and voice their vote. And among these legislators sits a young man,
Harry T. Byrne, a Republican legislator from Niota, Tennessee.
At 24 years old, he's the youngest legislator in the House. The air is tense and still. Until
Harry T. Byrne.
The young man stands from his desk, a red rose in his lapel. But in his pocket,
he had a letter from his mother over there in Niota.
Dear son,
We've had nothing but rain since you left.
Her name was Feb Byrne.
Uncle Bill and Mr. Bushnell came over this PM, stayed about an hour. They were in the Ford. We haven't had that car out since you left. And if this rainy weather doesn't let up, I fear we'll all have to stay at home the rest of the
summer. And really, it's just this ordinary letter.
You'll tire of what I'm writing, but I haven't.
From a mom to her son.
Murdy was real sick yesterday, but was better this morning. She's been complaining all summer.
But tucked into all of those mundane details about life in Nyota, there was this little motherly dig. A prodding.
I've been watching to see how you stood, but haven't seen anything yet.
You know, son, I've been reading about the suffrage fight in the papers, and I really hadn't seen your name anywhere. And then she says,
don't forget to be a good boy and help Miss Thomas Cap. Vote for suffrage, and don't keep them in doubt. With lots of love, Mama.
Harry T. Byrne is wearing a red rose.
And his vote?
He votes for women to have the right to vote.
So?
Up there in the balcony, there's just a moment of silence. What's going on here? What's going on? You can imagine this. You can imagine this. And then it dawns on you. Hey, Harry's changed his vote. It's not going to be 48 to 48. It's going to be 49 to 47. The suffragists, you can imagine, are crying. The antis are furious. You can imagine the total chaos here in this situation.
But there must be an awful lot of attention paid to Harry, right? Like, what?
Well, the legend is that the antis start chasing Harry through the House chamber. Harry is completely undone. Oh my gosh, what have I just done? So he jumps out a window. He's not jumping out a five-story window, but he gets out of the building and shimmies down the ledge to the state library, which is in the same building, where he gets in the window there, and Mrs. Moore, the librarian, Mary Daniel Moore, hides him in the stacks until the storm blows over. Now, that's the legend.
Wow.
Did Harry really climb out of that window?
Did any shimmying happen?
Yeah, we don't know how exaggerated that part of the story
is. The shouts from the hill carried all the way back to the Hermitage Hotel. Mrs. Cat could hear them from her window. She knew they'd won.
It was, in fact, passed.
The certificate of ratification was sent to Washington, D.C., and received by the Secretary of State. The final tally was actually 50 to 46. After Harry changed his vote, one other legislator switched sides, but it was clearly because Harry had changed first.
That's right. See,
so that vote was became the 19th Amendment to the United States Constitution.
Yes, in a manner of speaking, yes.
After the vote, Mrs. Cat sent Feb Byrne a telegram. You are blessed with a brave and honest son. Whatever the enemies of justice and decency may do now to show their vengeance upon him, he is bound to have a great future. You will ever be proud of him. Carrie E. Chapman Catt.
Well, his political career ended rather shortly after. But, you know, he took his mother's advice, and he did get his name in the paper, didn't he?
When you think about it, the difference between men and women as voters has gotten
decisive. Yeah.
You know what? This has made me happy. Thank you, 19th Amendment. And
yeah.
Thank you, Latif, for 19th. Producing this and coming up with all these stories.
Yes.
And checking them.
And thank you, listener, for listening and for voting when your local or state or national elections roll around, because it matters.
Yes, because it matters.
My grandmother went to the Methodist Church in November of 1920 with her four-year-old daughter at her side and voted because of something that took place right here in Nashville, Tennessee. I will never forget when I went to pick my mother up the last time she voted. She was sitting in the lobby of the retirement center where she lived, patiently waiting for me to come and pick her up with her American flag pin in her lapel. She was proud to be going to vote.
Thanks to Peggy Heinkel-Wolf at the Denton Record Chronicle in Texas, and thanks to Professor Rachel Goosen at Washburn University. Thanks also to Lynn Randall and Adrian Heath and Professor Mildred Warner at Cornell University. Thanks to Wayne Schulmister and to Debbie Daughtry, who lent us their Southern accents. Thanks to Andrea Morrow and the Texas Commission for Environmental Quality, as well as the Tennessee State Library and Archives, the Hermitage Hotel, the Calvin McClung Historical Collection at the Knox County Public Library, and last but not least, thanks to the Plymouth Fife and Drum Corps, including and especially director Jim Preedom, whose last name rhymes with freedom.
Start of message.
Hi, this is Jill Lepore.
This is Carol Busey in Nashville, Tennessee. I serve as the Davidson County historian and a professor of history at Volunteer State Community College.
Hi, this is Alan Lesleon, Emperor of Shiny Hiney.
Radio Lab is produced by Jad Abumrad.
Dylan Keefe is our director of sound design.
Soren Wheeler is our senior editor.
Jamie York is our senior producer.
Our staff includes Simon Adler,
Brenna Farrell,
David Gable,
Matt Keelty,
Robert Krolwich,
Andy McEwen,
Latif Nasra,
Melissa O'Donnell,
Ariane Wack,
and Molly Webster.
With help from Tracy Hunt,
Igar Fatali,
D.B. Wang,
Katie Ferguson,
Alexandra Lee Young, W. Harry Fortuna, and Persia Verlin.
Our fact checkers are Eva Dasher and Michelle Harris.
End of message.
Radiolab is supported by the John Templeton Foundation, funding research and catalyzing conversations that inspire people with awe and wonder. Learn about the researchers making the latest discoveries in the science of well-being, complexity, forgiveness, and free will at templeton.org/podcast.